If you want to be a coach in 2025, you have to think about problems that you solve. And the number one problem that people have when there's a shaky economy is, how do I make more money or save money? That's the number one thing they're thinking about. So whatever you do has to tie into that. That's what you have to be. A coach who solves problems, nothing else. Not a life coach, not a transformational coach, not an ontological coach. Nobody cares about your system, your process, your certifications. What they care about is one thing. I have this problem. Can you help?
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Welcome back to Selling with Love. I'm bringing back a guest that I absolutely adore, the way that he approaches how he sells, approaches how he treats his customers, and approaches how he inspires others to get into the industry of coaching. And I think it's ironic, we're going to be on the Selling with Love podcast, but we might be sharing a bit of tough love. For any of you who are coaches, people who are aspiring to consult others, who might be struggling to sell some of your initial packages, your initial products and offers, and you're wondering if sales is to blame. And we're going to do an investigation. We're going to have a conversation, and we're going to see what is the state of the industry and what are some of the key things we need to look at to actually have a lot more success if we're going out there to offer ourselves to support others, make an impact, but things seem to still be in the way to be ultra successful in the process. And the one that I bring on the show is none other than Rich Litvin. He is one of the top well-known leadership advisors, coaches for some of the top individuals around the world. He's the author of The Prosperous Coach, and we got a chance to connect through Mindvalley, where he's got his products available for a lot of people who are looking to develop themselves as coaches. And we're going to go deeper into the conversation than we did last time, where we did ruffle a few feathers, but we're going to talk about the state of the industry now in 2025. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. It's funny, we both have a smile on our face because we both enjoy these conversations. So I'm looking forward to this.
Well, isn't coaching all about having tough conversations? Like, you have to have the will to go into these directions?
I put it to you, we'll go straight there. One of the reasons that most people don't succeed as a coach is they're not willing to do that. They're too scared. They show up as needy. They show up with proving energy. They show up with pleasing energy. They don't want to offend anybody. And I've just written an article, actually, 7 steps to be a mediocre coach. Because sometimes the way to find out where you really want to go is to know where you don't want to go. Who wants to be mediocre? So let's jump straight in.
Well, I'd love, before we get to the individual, and that's amazing, by the way, I need to get some details on that article. You'll have to send it over. I think it was around like 4 or 5 years ago, the last time we talked. We were, I think, in the middle of the pandemic, which I know, like, that's 5 years ago, which still feels really crazy to me. And it seems from then, I speak to a lot more people who seem aware of what coaching is, like, especially like life coaching. It seems to be something that's much more mainstream. And you know that because now there's a lot more memes and jokes about that that'll be in the more mainstream media. So it feels like coaching has in some way gone more mainstream. Is that a correct assessment of the state of the industry?
Here's what I would say. Don't be a life coach in 2025. The last couple of years, there has been a lot of money in the economy. People were at home during the pandemic. They wanted support. They had money because they weren't spending it. They had money for a couple of years after the pandemic was over, and they spent it. And a lot of people spent it on coaching. Coaching's become a thing. And we're now in 2025. A recession is on its way, a global recession. Now, I'm not upset if I'm wrong on that one, because if I'm wrong on that one, that will be great. But if I'm right, then right now, coaching has become a discretionary expense for 99% of people, because they spend money on coaching when they think they have some. When they're worried about money running out, they stop spending money. And nobody needs a coach for their life. They will pay money to solve a problem. So if you want to be a coach in 2025, you have to think about problems that you solve. And the number one problem that people have when there's a shaky economy is, how do I make more money or save money? That's the number one thing they're thinking about. So whatever you do has to tie into that. That's what you have to be. A coach who solves problems, nothing else. Not a life coach, not a transformational coach, not an ontological coach. Nobody cares about your system, your process, your certifications. What they care about is one thing. I have this problem. Can you help?
That's definitely a sobering message, but I'd want to take it a step further. But has the success of a coach always been the ones that get clear on solving a problem? Is just that the economy was so good, you could get away with not even having figured that out before?
Possibly, you know, when times are well, people stop and reflect and like, what do I need help with? And they're willing to invest in something like coaching. When times get challenging, they stop and think, I haven't got the money to invest in coaching. Now that's their mistake, not the coach's, it's the client's mistake. Our job is to help educate them, to show them. And one of the ways to show them that is you give a really simple way of showing them is an ROI on what they want. Don't get me wrong, I believe deeply in the power of mindset coaching. You just can't sell mindset coaching in a downturn economy because nobody cares about mindset. They care about the problems they're facing. So look, when I wrote The Prosperous Coach, it was 10 years ago. It's sold 125,000 copies by word of mouth. I've never done anything to market that book. And what I wrote in that book 10 years ago is that 80% of coaches are making 20 grand a year or less. I looked at the figures just today for this article I was writing, and the average salary for a life coach in a study by ZipRecruiter in 2025 is $38,000. That's $18 an hour. Go and work at a restaurant. You'll make more money. Like, most coaches are struggling because they can't do this thing called selling coaching. And that's what I'm talking about here. And there's a couple of things to that. Well, let me check in. Am I going the right direction? You want me to keep going?
Absolutely. This is it.
So number one is lack of professional self-esteem. Most coaches don't believe that what they do will change the person's life. You have to go into a conversation knowing that if I have a conversation with you, it's going to change your life. If you do not believe that from the inside out, it likely means you've never experienced life-changing coaching, which likely means you've never invested in life-changing coaching. And most coaches haven't. Most coaches have never had a coach, have never spent more money than they feel comfortable to spend. They've done an online training and certification, and they have this expectation, I should have clients. I have a training, don't you know? Who gives a shit what training you have? Are you changing people's lives? That's what counts, because when you know that from the inside out, other people feel it. You're not taking something from anybody. And most coaches feel that they're taking something. I don't want to be selling to them. Well, there's nothing wrong with selling if you know that you love what you do and it has an impact. It's what you teach, right? Selling is an act of love. And it can't be an act of love if you're in fear. Those two things don't go together. And when you're in fear, you show up as needy, or you show up as eager. Oh my God, I can help you. Let me help you. Neediness and eagerness are the opposite sides of the equation, and they both are a turnoff to the person on the other side. You don't have eagerness when you know, look, if it's not this person, it'll be the next, because all I do every day is serve people. And if I serve enough people, some of them are going to say, I want more of this.
I want to put a little asterisk for anybody who's listening who might not be a coach, because I know there's a lot of different listeners, and I want to take an example. Like, I know one of my listeners, which we had done some consultation, actually ran a massage studio, and they were so competent at what they do, and they were fully booked. And their problem was that, oh my God, I can't replicate myself enough. And then they even had resistance towards raising their own prices because they didn't want to disappoint the people that I've booked in advance. But matter of fact, there was so much demand, there was no other choice. They had to raise their price, and nobody blinked an eye because they all had transformational results from going through the studio, and they wanted to work with her personally. And that to me was like, wow, when you're so overflowing with demand, then you can start charging a higher premium. You don't have this neediness because your calendar is absolutely booked. But a lot of people who are at the beginning are, they went through a certification that promised them to make maybe a certain amount of money, and then their calendar is completely empty. They still want to charge a premium. And a lot of times I go and say, hey, you shouldn't even be thinking about getting money. You should be thinking of getting stories from people. You should be getting practice on people. And it seems like there's a lot of resistance towards doing that. Am I even leading them in the right direction?
I think it's the perfect direction. Yeah. I charged $10 an hour when I started coaching, which means at 4 sessions a month, I was getting paid $2.50 an hour. I would have made more money working at McDonald's. But I loved this profession so much, I was fully in. And I took my savings and I used that to sustain me because I was building a business. You're an entrepreneur as a coach. The trouble is that most people watch Shark Tank and think, I want to be an entrepreneur. I just need to pitch to the right investor and I'll have a successful business. Same with coaching. I have a right for people to pay me because don't you know I've invested in my coach training. Nobody cares. You have to get out there and create enough value for people. And I did. I created so much value for people and I got very little money. And I met a guy almost 20 years ago called Steve Chandler. We ended up becoming friends and writing a book together called The Prosperous Coach. Steve taught me why I was struggling to get clients. I wasn't creating value for people. So all I did was put my attention on serving people. And I didn't worry whether I was paid or not. I wanted to be paid, but I knew if I don't create enough value, people are not going to ask me. What your client, who's a massage therapist, did, she showed the universe that she creates value for people. And then she became oversubscribed. And then she had this quality problem. I can't cope with the number of clients, which is at which point you say to your clients, look, I don't want to put up my prices, but the market is dictating this. Here's the thing about the market, Jason. It's a value neutral test of whether you're doing something of value in the world. It's simply going to tell you, if you are creating enough value, then the market will tell you. Look, if you're a teacher like I used to be for the first part of my career, or a nurse, you create a ton of value in the world. Unfortunately, there are some professions that are a calling and the universe, the government, different countries don't value them, so you're not paid so much. This is not a generic to all professions, but in the coaching profession or other service industries, if you create enough value, people will say, I want this, and they'll pay for it. And they'll pay more as you create even more value.
Yeah. I find that this gap in confidence often comes from the competence, right? And you talk about in the article, now I kind of want to pull from it, which is you talk about the ways that people go towards a path of mediocrity. And I'd be curious if there's a few of these things that you think are relevant to this conversation right now.
Well, so let me talk about confidence. Coaches make the mistake that they need more confidence. Confidence is a result, not a requirement. It comes afterwards. Look back at your life. Anything that you've done that you've become successful at, there was a moment 1 year before you did it, 1 day before you started, when you were thinking, oh shit, can I do this? And then at some point you began to do it. I've got kids. They came onto this planet. They couldn't walk and they couldn't talk. It was amazing that moment they took their first step. Humans have got a track record of doing impossible things, but we forget. So we keep looking ahead, going, I want to do this, but I don't feel confident. Nobody cares about confidence. It's the wrong place to put your attention. Your attention should be on courage. Courage is following your heart. Courage is doing things that scare you. Confidence will come later. So the mistake we make is we keep buying these programs and reading these books, 7 Steps to Success. What that is someone else's pathway of how they were successful. They've gone back and looked at it and they've taught it to you. And because they're successful, you think, let me follow that path. No, that was the path that led to their success. If I followed Richard Branson's path to success, well, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. He's a different type of person to me. So is Tony Robbins. They're different people to me. So the secret actually in coaching, what I do with my clients, is have them turn around and look at their past. What has made you successful until now? And we draw out their zone of genius and the things that they're really good at and help them play that into the future. That's their pathway to success.
I want to poke on this string a little more because oftentimes people will come to me and be like, Jason, can you teach me how to pitch like you do? And I have this instinctual ability to, you know, somebody tells me what their product and service is, what their vision, and I'll be like, yeah, I could spit that in a 30-minute elevator pitch that sounds pretty damn good. But I don't prescribe people to use what I say because that's my path. And so I'm trying to help people kind of unlock if they want to sell with love, they have to sell it their way. But oftentimes they're observing others that seem to have, you know, the extroverted gift of putting a string of words together. And they start thinking, I need to change how I speak to people because if I do it like that, I'll have more success. I feel it's a bit of a myth. I'd be curious to know your opinion on that.
Yeah, you know, over 20 years of doing this thing called coaching, I've become really masterful with language. I didn't start that way. Look, I went back to the gym a couple of years ago after lockdown and the pandemic. I was out of the gym for a while, for a few years. And I went back to the gym and I was training with a trainer and we were doing shoulder press. And I've always found that hard. And so initially we started with the bar, just the bar. Now, it's 45 pounds, so it's not light, but it looks embarrassing. And then it got worse, as I got a little bit stronger, he put these tiny weights, like half-pound weights on, at least with just the bar, it looked like I was warming up. With half-pound weights on it, it looked really embarrassing. And I said this to him, and he said, and this is a big guy, used to play football in the United States, a massive guy. And he said, Rich, you have to remember, we all started with just the bar. So a good reminder for everybody, they can listen to you and me and how we use language and how it's powerful. We didn't start that way. We started in ways that were awkward and we learned over time what works and what doesn't work. So I don't teach pitching to get coaching clients. The heart of my book, The Prosperous Coach, is sell the experience of coaching, not the concept of coaching. Oh, you want to know about coaching? Why don't we sit down together? Let me give you an experience of it. And if I serve them powerfully enough, at some point, either they say to me, how do I do more of this? Or I say to them, hey, look, that goal you described, that thing we just worked on for the last 45 minutes, what would it be like if you and I both worked on that the next 45 days? And now we're in.
There's a concept in sales for services that the value of the service is always going to diminish after it's been delivered. And I think in coaching, that's one of the bigger fears that exists is the moment you give the coaching, if you give an experience, then the value or perceived value of it will not be as high as how much you want to charge.
Which is why coaches hold back. Like, I don't want to give them everything. If I give them it all before, why do they even work with me? And it's the opposite of what I teach. Serve people so powerfully, they never forget your conversation for the rest of their life. I mean, it's my approach today. It's how I'm having this conversation. I want this to be a life-changing conversation. Can I guarantee that? No, of course, it's out of my control. But I'm showing up from this place that I want to teach ideas, provoke people's thinking, shake people up in a way that changes at least one person's life on this podcast today.
And again, coming back to the fact that you have all of this experience. So when you show up, like this comes up so amazingly and profound. If I'm still at the beginning and I'm testing, right? This is like, I'm going out, maybe charging the $10, which was one of your paths. Maybe that's something somebody wants to experience as well. But like at the beginning, you might be a little clumsy, but at the same time, this is the practice that's required. And so you're having these first conversations. You're just at the beginning. You have one individual who decides to spend 45 minutes with you and maybe they don't want to buy. And then maybe your self-esteem is affected. Like, how does that journey usually progress so people can have an expectation of what's to come?
If you're not ready to hear the word no again and again and again, you've got to give up this career of coaching. You can be the most amazing coach on the planet, but if you cannot sell this thing called coaching, then it will always be a hobby. And there's nothing wrong with that. For some people, coaching should be a hobby. It should be something that you offer to your friends or to family you don't charge for. It's something you love. It's something you bring into the business that you work in. And it's not something you ever get paid for. If you want to get paid for coaching, become a professional coach, then you have to A, love what you do, this thing called coaching, and B, love this thing called the sales of coaching. You have to love selling coaching. And the way that I teach that is to make the two as similar as possible. If I'm selling coaching, I give you an experience of it. I've just written a book. My next book is coming out in the fall. It's called 100K Clients, How to Find Them, Coach Them, and Keep Them. I'm a bit nervous, honestly, about putting that out in the world because I have this little fear, the human side of me, of like, what will people think of me? But it's really what I've taught coaches for a few years, how to become premium at what you do, exclusive at what you do. The kind of person like the massage therapist who is so in demand that she can raise her prices and people don't blink. The number doesn't matter. That's the game that I teach. That you have to be able to hear. I get more no's than most coaches on the planet. That's what people don't realize. I've built my ability to hear the word no, and I've reframed it. No is an acronym, Jason. It stands for next one.
You've had more no's, which has brought you closer to your success. I think that's one to keep in mind.
Yes, in the book, The Prosperous Coach, Steve Chandler used to say, yes lives in the land of no. Yes lives in the land of no. And so that's the game. Look, let me finish this piece around the coaches who are worried about, I gave someone some value, they didn't sign up. You need some resources to sustain you at the beginning of a business. There's a reason you get a business loan as an entrepreneur when you launch a business. Most coaches don't think about that. They do a training and they think, I should have clients. If you don't have the resources to sustain you, then go out and create resources. That might mean going back and getting a job, part-time or full-time. You may not want to do that, but if you're a broke coach, then you're always going to be needier than the person in front of you and they can feel it. Neediness is like client repellent. So go and get a job. get some money coming in. If you have a family, oh my God, put them first. Not your selfish desire to be a coach. Take care of the family first and then bring coaching in on the side. Offer one spot a month for a coaching client and have that be a side hustle when something else is bringing in the money. I did this in the early days of my coaching, Jason. I helped sell for somebody else's coaching business. I couldn't do it for myself. I could do it for them because I admired them. I made money selling their coaching. I wrote a blog for someone, a well-known coach. And I used to resent it because they got great compliments from my writing and nobody knew it was me. But I did what it took to get money coming in. One of the things I recommend to newer coaches these days is go to BetterUp or a company like them that offers online coaching. You'll be paid $100 an hour. It's not very much, but they will do the delivery of clients for you. You don't have to enroll any clients and you can build that professional self-esteem. If you're really great or you come from a corporate world, I should say, and you understand that world, go to something like an organization like Korn Ferry, who will position you to coach the leaders and CEOs of corporations and organizations. And again, you won't get paid that much money. You don't have to do the enrollment. For some coaches, that will be heaven. For others, it's a stepping stone. But get money coming in so you never sit down opposite somebody and they can feel that you need them more than they need you.
Yeah, I've been a big advocate for people to, and again, this is just because based on my path, like finding work where you get so much experience and get so much exposure and you get so much results within the framework of an organization accelerates your ability to do the same if you decide to go on your own. I mean, I spent some time at Mindvalley. That was the best place for me to learn. How do you optimize a brand or a personal author who's trying to get some more success with their publishing? I was inside the Mecca. And so now on my own, I get to have a lot of that experience and a bit of the credentials that come from that experience. And I feel like oftentimes the carrot that gets waved to get somebody into coaching is that you don't need to get a job anymore. And I think that's one of the most toxic mindsets to give people if they're trying to develop a new skill, a career. And not to mention that most businesses, when I went to business school, would speak about if you're going into any venture, you should expect the first 2 years not to be profitable because you need to figure out your product market fit. You need to develop your skills.
If the 4-hour work week was really true, they'd have developed waterproof laptops so we really could sit on the beach all day running our business from the beach. The 4-hour work week works when you've been in business for 10, 15, 20 years and built a business with people who work for you such that you can let them run things without you being in it. I think it's more than 2 years. I tell coaches, first 1,000 days. 1,000 days. Assume you're not going to make any money in the first 1,000 days. Like a newborn baby, for the first 1,000 days, first 3 years of its life, it cannot do anything on its own. Your business is a baby. It can't do anything. So be willing to put that amount of time in. Now, will it always take that much time? No, often it won't. But your willingness to be in it for the long haul is what will help you to succeed. But it will sometimes, for some people, take longer than 1,000 days. Are you ready for that? I think that's the secret to success, Jason. The real secret to success that most people don't teach is that you've got to be in it for the long haul.
Yeah. I mean, just speak about podcasting in general as a medium. Most people give up after 5 episodes. None of them make it past 1 year. And at some point, if you keep doing it long enough, then you become one of the top percent. It can't be stopped because you never stop. Now, would there be a litmus test? Because there's obviously maybe a flag that I should look for that if I'm in this long enough and there's something that's maybe an indicator that, hey, pivot should be required. Although I feel that there's enough temptations to make you pivot in anything you do today. But should there be anything we look for?
The market. If you want to be an entrepreneur, and coaches have to see themselves as entrepreneurs, the market will tell you. If no one's ever paying you for coaching, you're not a professional coach. It's not for everybody. It really isn't. This is why I put my flag in the ground. When Steve and I wrote that book together, Steve had a slightly different view to me. He really does believe that anyone could become a coach. I don't. I think coaching is a profession for people who've been really talented, driven, high performers in other fields who can give back in all sorts of ways. But the problem with coaching right now is that you're a hairdresser and your clients say, oh, you're really great at listening to us. You should become a coach. Well, possibly, but not necessarily. Can you really create enough value for somebody that their life changes, that their business changes, that their relationship changes, and that they keep paying you more money? Not just, you're great at listening to me.
I think this whole episode is going to be quite the awakening for everyone. And I think it's much needed because, hey, people have gotten really good at selling you the dream of becoming a coach, making tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands from home with your dream clients and not having to put any effort. The marketers have come and oversaturated the market.
I get really frustrated with this one, Jason, because I watch people start their coach training, they become a coach, they can't make any money as coaching, and they start an online business teaching coaches how to build a business. I got so frustrated with this that 2 or 3 years ago, I said, excuse my language, but this is fucking crazy. It's not right. I've been in this business for almost 20 years, about 17 years, a couple of years back. I said, okay, I'm going to play them at their own game. I'm going to start investing my money in marketing. You know, for 17 years, I'd built a word of mouth business. I taught people how to build a word of mouth business. And I was watching marketers come in telling coaches, we'll help you build an online business. The problem with coaches is that we're people. So we don't like internet marketing. We get overwhelmed by it. We don't enjoy it. If you like it, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not knocking internet marketing. Just that most coaches aren't internet marketers. And they're being sold a dream of all you have to do is do a coach training, build an email list, create a podcast, and you have all the clients you ever need. No, it doesn't work that way. But a couple of years ago, I got really frustrated. I have spent about $350,000 in the last 2 or 3 years. I built a business that we made $1 million in a year, and I took home $15,000. So I closed the business down. That's not a business. I had this dream that I would build and scale this business that would teach online, and it just didn't work. Brought in a lot of money, but nobody cares about top line revenue. It's what you take home that counts. Then I thought, well, let me try again. Invested 250 grand with a couple of internet marketing companies, and they did some great stuff. But these are all vanity metrics. How many people follow me in Facebook? How many likes I get? They mean nothing unless it's money that I actually take home. So I've just made this decision a couple of months ago. I let go of my marketing people and I've gone back to this word of mouth approach that I teach and I've lived for almost 20 years. I teach coaches how to build a boutique business with a handful of high performing, high fee clients. It's back to what I do. Now, I happen to be known in this industry, so it is slightly different. I'm a thought leader, but I still have this very intimate boutique business.
Thank you, by the way, for sharing that, because most people, one of the key ones I get as far as an objection why people feel they don't get clients is like, well, I don't have a large social media following. That's all people care about. And I think people don't care at all, particularly if you're getting a coach. I would assume that for high-end clients, they don't want a coach that's the famous coach. They'd rather have the expert that's behind the scenes and is focused more on them than their own brand. Not crazy. And so, yeah, well, I am a bit part of the problem. I have been trying to help a lot of coaches learn how to sell more. It's so interesting. So I have this program on helping coaches how to sell more. And as I delivered some webinars that were just giving a whole lot of value up front, sharing some of my principles, I would collect feedback on what were the most impactful things. I talked to people about like, okay, how do you identify your target market, get close to understanding like what's your segment you're going to serve. I would teach them on how to set up some ways of capturing leads and how to close clients, etc. And at the beginning, I did this little exercise. And the little exercise was just to see what are the fears that hold you back from, you know, going forward and serving, right? And I'd have people make a list of their fears, which is, you know, a fear-solving exercise. I picked that up from Tim Ferriss and stuff like that. And then I'd ask people, you know, okay, I taught you like marketing methods, sales methods, some strategies, all that stuff. What was the most impactful thing of that training? And they're like, oh my God, solving the fear. That was transformational. And I'm like, huh? Like, that's what was the most impactful. And then the more I started doing this work, the more I realized how mindset, fear, trumps strategy, trumps technique, tactics all the time. And I found that so fascinating because that's really where a lot of the work needs to be done, isn't it?
Yeah, I just did a survey of 100 of my clients and got exactly the same thing. The number one fear, just this is lack of professional self-esteem. I'm not good enough. And sometimes the fear is, well, if I get the client, then how do I even serve them? I'm actually terrified. So we're actually keeping them out because we're scared. Like if I bring in someone really fascinating to work with, well, then what am I going to do? So we have fear of failure and fear of success all in at the same time. You're absolutely right.
God. Yeah, it was like, you're not afraid of selling. It's like, what's the worst that would happen? People be like, well, they'll say no when I pitch them. I'm like, no, they'll say yes. And now you need to deliver. And then people went, oh my God. Now it's like foot's on the brake even before you start. And that, I think, is a very real fear that exists for most people in the beginning stages, regardless of the industry. And you speak about the nurturing of courage, and I'd maybe want to end in this category, which are some very clear ways people can actually start nurturing what is much more effective than confidence, but training to be more courageous in today's world.
Yeah, that's a good catch. So I've got an event. I'm about to fly to Santa Fe on the weekend. I've got 100 clients coming in. I ran an online event where I taught them how to really thrive as a coach in this coming recession. So they're flying into this event, and I assume they're thinking they're going to sit in chairs and have a conference and be great because we're together and we're listening to Rich. He'll be up on the stage, and 90% of it's going to be experiential, Jason. I'm going to have them doing exercises that scare the hell out of them. I'm going to say, okay, now you have an hour. Go and contact a client. Go and reach out to somebody. Go and create some value for somebody. Go and make some money. I've got all sorts of exercises. I'm going to have them partnered up in the room, coaching one another. And there's some really powerful people in that room who've been coaching for 30 years, been entrepreneurs for 25 years. And it's going to be really intimidating. But that's the only way you get past it. Courage is doing things that scare you. Here's a great story. Dan Sullivan, who for 50 years has coached entrepreneurs, was in the army. And he was in, I think he was in Korea, and they were doing live hand grenade practice for the first time. Dan's 80 something years old right now. He said back then he's in his 20s, and the sergeant says, okay, we've got live hand grenade practice tonight. We're about to begin. Who's scared? And he put his hand up, and nobody else did. And the sergeant said, I trust you, Sullivan, because everybody else is scared and they're afraid to admit it. He said, being courageous isn't not being scared. Being courageous is being so scared that you pee your pants and then doing what needs to be done with wet pants.
That was beyond the quote I was expecting, but it hits home a lot right. More.
So we forget, right? We forget. We think it's a confidence. Oh, let me do things to build my confidence. No, confidence is the payoff. You have to do things that scare you.
I love it. Rich, every time we have a conversation, we know we're going to ruffle some feathers and bring people back on the right track. I'm so grateful for every opportunity we have to share what you teach to so many people, to have it be shared to my listeners. And again, there's so many takeaways to take from this conversation, but I'd be curious to know a bit more about you. I know you're doing some relocation. You've decided to let go a lot of this online. You're working with your private clients. Anything exciting aside from this event coming up that's on the horizon for you that people should be in touch with and connect with you for?
Well, let me go back for a second because I want to share that this is a Me Too thing. It's not about you guys need to be more courageous. I live in LA these days, and so Hollywood is around the corner. We happen to know some people who are well-known people, A-list celebrities and so on. And I was at a party, and Kim Kardashian was there. And all the kids were coming up to her, trying to get her autograph and do selfies and things. And a bit later on in the night, she was sitting at a table near to where I was sitting. And I saw her, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to leave her be. I'm not going to disturb. She was sitting on her phone on her own, texting for quite a while. I'm not going to be the one who disturbs her. I'm not going to be the kids can do that, but I'm going to leave her alone. And so I did. I felt really proud of myself. And it was only the next day as I was reflecting, I realized, oh, now you made a mistake. Whilst it was true, I did want to give her space and not be one of these people in awe of a celebrity. I also could have gone up to her and said, hey, Kim, I'm Rich. Saw you sitting on your own on your phone. I thought I'd come over and say hi. And so not to get her as a client, but just to connect. It's the heart of the book, The Prosperous Coach, only connect. It's never connect with somebody in order to turn them into a client. It's just connect. And I saw that my fear of this story about who this person was held me back from just going over and saying hi. And that's where everything happens from, just saying hi. So I'm calling myself out on this one so you can see whatever game you're playing, there's always a game that can be played at another level that you'll catch yourself holding yourself back from.
You're not alone on that. There's so many times I've had these fears come up for me, and I sometimes play very small, so I don't need to step into that uncomfortable zone.
Right, right. Look, I'm an introvert. I'm not an extrovert. People think, you know, you need to be outgoing, and introvert doesn't mean you're shy. Introvert means that I get drained of energy being around people for a while. If I go to a party, my wife, whenever she says, are you ready to go home now, babe? The answer is never, let's hang on for a little bit longer. It's always, oh my God, thought you'd never ask. So That's all that means. The prosperous coach approach, and Steve Chandler's an introvert too, it's the introvert's way to build a business. It's not doing online marketing. It's not going out there hustling at events to talk to loads of people or being on a stage. It's building deep connection. Introverts, we're the ones who are standing in the corner all night talking to one person. Well, I built a business that way.
And I think that's comfortable for a lot of people to know that, hey, whatever style you go for, there is a way to be successful at that. There are people that are super extroverted that will do the hustle, that will go with that high energy, and they will attract that type of client. And you've been able to get your business going. And I think that just proves the point you said earlier, which is there's always a way for you to look at how to be successful when you look at your own behaviors and enhance that in the way to serve and provide value. And so, hey, I was going to let you go, but I feel like there's one more thing I need to extract from you here, which is often when you get started that you're finding yourself having conversations with a lot of people that could not pay for your products and services, like going for the wrong target market. I feel like you'd have a very unique opinion on that. I'd love to hear your thoughts because that's a very common, could say, hey, you're going after the wrong client type of objection.
In the Prosperous Coach book, we taught this framework of four elements: connect, invite, create, propose. Connect with people just to connect. Some of them you're going to invite to an experience with you, and that's where you create your coaching magic and you serve them really powerfully. And for some of them, you're going to make a proposal. Hey, look, here's a couple of ways we could work together. What I teach people these days is after you spent time talking to somebody, invite them to a 20-minute chat. That's it, a 20-minute chat. Because time is people's most precious asset. So it's too early when you first meet someone to invite them to a deep coaching experience. If you invite them to a chat, it's much easier. Hey, look, why don't we talk for 15 minutes? We'll jump on a Zoom call. I got 3 or 4 questions I want to ask you. And at the end of that, we'll know. Either I'll suggest to you a way that I could support you or a resource I can send you. How does that sound? 15 minutes? Okay, let's do that. They get on the call and listen, I'm going to ask you 3 questions. First, and a couple of questions, simple ones. You know, tell me in 3 years' time, what would be the most life-changing things that could happen in your world or your business? What's holding you back the most? What are your biggest gifts? Something simple like that. 3 powerful coaching questions. The question that comes next is the most important one. It's, what have you done about that? That big dream you just shared with me, what have you done about that? Well, Jason, you know, it's the first time I ever shared it with anybody. I'm so excited to be able to tell you my dream. Well, what they're telling you is they haven't invested any time or energy or money in it other than thinking about it. It's too early. So that's not the time to offer to coach them. Look, if you're a beginner coach, you should coach your ass off, man. You should coach as many people as possible, as much time as possible. That's your marketing budget. Just coach as many people as possible. But at some point, you have to have a filter. And that question is the filter. Because if they say, oh my God, I've had 2 coaches, I'm working with a mentor around this, let me tell you about the 3 ways we put this project out in the world so far, here's what's worked, here's how it hasn't worked. Now you know they're in, they've got skin in the game. Okay, how would you like to have a coaching experience with me? Today we've just chatted, I just drew out some questions about your thoughts or in your dreams and doubts and insecurities. So if you just put Rich Litvin and 20-minute chat into Google, you'll find some articles I've written about that.
Rich, I've asked you this question before and I'll ask you again, see if there's any evolution or another beautiful way of saying it for today's conversation. But I ask everyone what selling with love means to them, and I'd love to know what it means to you today.
JFK was asked why he was giving a speech, and he said the only reason to give a speech is to change the world. I think the only way to coach people is to know that you're changing the world. That's selling with love.
Brother, thank you for your time, your wisdom, your energy, showing up fully as you always do. I'll wish you the best on the event coming up and the move that I know you're transitioning. And again, I want to invite everyone who is listening here. We're going to put a link to the article that was referred to by Rich that you just wrote that talks about the 7 ways to stay as a mediocre coach.
That one's not come out yet, but I'll get that one to you.
Oh, it'll be out by the time this comes out.
So anyone wants to hear what I'm up to, Jason, just they can put my name into Google. It's richlitvin.com. I got a book called 100K Clients coming out later in the year. All I do is create ways to create value for people. The same way I approach building my business beyond serving clients is put value out into the world.
Thank you for living what you teach and to inspiring others to do the same. I want to close with that, and we'll make sure all the resources are available for people to go deeper. All the best, much love, and what a conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money. Like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.